Well, good evening, everyone. I have started recording the meeting just so everyone's aware. But welcome to the December 5th Citizens Involvement Committee of AMATS. I think I've met most of you, but I'm Matt Stewart. I'm the planning administrator here. And we have a few other folks from our staff, Seth Bush, who's our GIS coordinator, and then Jeff Gardner and Matt Mullen, who are our planners in our office. See Ron, Dave, welcome Dave, Tiffany, and Austin. So good evening, everyone. And you have to excuse me. We had, as I was telling some of the people that were here early, we had some last minute tech emergencies that I think are sorted out now, but bear with me a second because I'm a little behind here because I'm trying to get things back on my screen. Or maybe someone at AMATS, can you tell me what's first on our agenda? Does anyone have the agenda in front of them?
Hey Matt, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hey, sorry, my video is being weird and not loading, so I don't know what's going on my end. But yeah,
The first
you were just
item
gonna
is the
give the
CMP.
yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, great. So give me just a
Job, Jeff.
second because I do, or at least I did, seems to have frozen up now, but there we go. Okay. So this is something that we have, our CMP, our congestion management process, is something that we've talked about the last two CIC meetings. So unless there are any specific questions, I wasn't going to do too much of a presentation, but we are asking our committees to do final approval of that this month. And just to kind of characterize it in a nutshell, so a couple, well, I guess I would, one of the things I would say about it is we typically do not, as an agency, do not believe in, making major improvements to improve congestion in terms of like expanding capacity. We're much more interested in small operational improvements or
Yeah, it
ITS
should be okay.
improvements
And like I said, when you want to talk,
that will
up on the screen.
allow like
Okay, I think we're all set. Thank you
roadways
very
to
much. How do I
improve a
get this
little
full
bit.
screen?
It is.
I can hear you, Dave, if you're not sure if you can hear us.
I hear you. I'll
Oh,
try to
okay.
put that right there before you talk. But this is full screen.
But anyway, so we're kind of, we've recommended several corridors for smaller improvements, but not capacity adding improvements. And we found almost invariably that a lot of our congestion is decreasing in our area. Our traffic volumes are decreasing throughout the region. And so we're kind of recommending a modest approach and trying to recommend small spot improvements to signalization and using technology and stuff to improve travel time. But we don't want to speed up corridors or make people drive faster on them and that kind of thing. So anyway, we've talked about this the last couple of times, but we are asking for final approval on this. So really that's all I was going to say today, unless there are any questions about it. And if there are, Seth and I can try to answer those. Okay, well then I'll move on to the next thing, which I believe that's the traffic crash report, Jeff. Is that correct?
The crash report is next, yes.
Okay, great. Okay, and everyone can see my screen, correct?
Yes, yes,
Okay.
yes.
So I think most of you have participated in the CIC before. So if you have, you know that this is something that we update each year. And what we do with this traffic crash annual crash report is it's a 3-year average of the three most recent years of data. And so we were able to get this report together for our December meetings. This takes a lot of work in our office. Seth kind of is the one that starts it off. And then Amy from our staff does a lot of cleaning of the data. And then, some of us write the report. But so we have this report, and I was just going to present some of the main findings from it. if you saw in your packets, we do have the plan in there, and we've done some reorganization of, you know, how the sections are laid out and everything, but a lot of the stuff is kind of similar from last year. And one thing I just did want to mention right up front, as many of you know, we have kind of two processes that we use at AMATS to assess safety. We have this annual crash report, which generates a high crash list of sections and intersections, which I'll get into in a second. And then we also have a very comprehensive safety study called our Safe Streets for All action plan. And through that, we developed a high injury network, which is based more on our more serious crashes. It's ranking our worst locations based on serious injuries and fatalities. You can see on the screen some of the differences between those two methodologies. So let's talk a little bit about trends. I think this is always really interesting stuff to look at. And so it was kind of a mix of good news and bad news. One of the good things is you can see like our overall crashes are trending down somewhat significantly. You know, modest decrease from last year, this year. But if you look at, you know, 8 or 10 years ago, crashes are significantly lower than they used to be. And what's interesting, I'm going to show you a bunch of trends, but all of these things kind of mirror what is happening nationally. So that's kind of interesting. Also some good news on our property damage only and our minor injury crashes. So these would be our two less severe crash categories. Those numbers both went down this year a little bit. But when we get to our more serious crashes, the news is not as good. And this serious injury crashes in particular was kind of troubling because you can see up until this year, those numbers had been quite flat year to year. And then we had a pretty decent surge this year in our number of serious injury crashes. Our fatal crashes also went up, which we definitely don't like to see. It was a fairly modest increase from last year. However, it's really close to the really high numbers that we saw during the pandemic in 2020. Well, it's tied with 2020 and in 2021. So we're really not happy to see that. Also very troubling, but again, mirroring those national trends, is both our bike-related crashes and our pedestrian-related crashes went up by about 19% each. And, you know, it's two different charts here that show the different severities of crashes. The number I'm citing is just specifically to the total number. Thought this might get a little messy if I tried to put a bunch of increased numbers in here. So again, pedestrians similar to the bicycles, but both up significantly this year. And what's kind of even more troubling, if you look at, you know, the last 4 years, they've been going up each year. So we don't like to see that. So I don't want to bore you with the summary, but some of the details are written here, but just talks a little bit about our process. That's all outlined in section 3 of our report, if you're interested in that. But basically, through our methodology, we generate a list of our high crash locations, and it's based on how many crashes happen per year, as well as, like, to be on this list, at least 30% of those have to have injuries or fatalities. That matches how ODOT assesses safety through their HSIP program. So we've changed our methodology. I think it's been three to four years now to kind of mirror their methodology. And so we then rank those locations. If you've seen our crash reports before, you know, we have a list from, you know, worst, or, you know, number one, which is worst, to several hundred. I think it's 138 with the sections and 200 something with the intersections. So yeah, with our sections, here's a map of our top 50. They're kind of throughout the area, but let's like dive in a little bit more and look at our top sections. So it is 138, like I said. And just kind of as an interesting aside, like, we also run a quick analysis that shows, you know, how many of these high crash sections are also on our Safe Streets for All high injury network. With sections, it's about a quarter of them are on the high injury network. Our number one location was the same as last year, actually. Our top three were all in Portage County, which was kind of interesting to see. But here's our list of our top 10, ranked sections. We also, Matt from our office was able to look at our past 2 years' reports and see how those sections ranked in the previous 2 years. Looking now at intersections, those are kind of throughout our area. A lot of them are in Akron, but really throughout the area overall. Our number one and our number two ended up being the same this year as last year. I know some of these locations, some of our communities are starting to talk about improvements. So it's good that our communities are looking at these and trying to figure out ways to make a lot of these intersections safer. But number one being the same one that was in Ravenna Township last year, and then number two being one that I think a lot of you are probably familiar with up in the National Park, actually, on Riverview Road at Ira Road. So that's been pretty high for the, well, for quite a while, actually, and it's been the number two for the last two crash reports. And just wanted to wrap up talking a little bit about bicycle and pedestrian crash trends. Of course, I mentioned how it's troubling how those are rising. But the other thing that's troubling, you know, if you are in a bike or a pedestrian crash, you're very likely to be injured. In our area, you can see the figures there. You know, it's over 90% for both modes. We did not have any bike fatalities this year, fortunately, but, you know, there have been a couple over the last few years and 31 pedestrian fatalities over the last 3 years. Our report goes into like time of year, time of day, when these crashes occur. One of the things that I thought was kind of interesting this year is our pedestrian crashes, the trend line or the graph of throughout the year kind of went up, down through the year. Whereas in years past, it kind of went up as you might expect, like in the late summer months, and then started to go back down when the weather got cold. Here, it was just more of an up and down kind of trend line. So, and just real quick, here's a map of where our bike related crashes were over the 3 year period. They're throughout the area, but of course, you know, Akron being a fairly dense area, and places like the city of Kent, honestly, like where you have a fair amount of bicycle activity, that's where a lot of those crashes occurred. Ravenna had quite a few too. Pedestrian crashes, you know, as you might expect, a lot of those are in locations that are more walkable, where people are walking more. We do see a lot of pedestrian crashes on a lot of those suburban, they're kind of urban, but kind of suburban arterial roadways. You know, they may or may not have sidewalks. They're four lanes, five lanes. People are crossing, not at crosswalks, you know. We see a lot of that kind of stuff, but they're kind of throughout our area. We do have some pedestrian crashes in very rural areas. So it's just a interesting jumping off point to kind of assess where these are occurring. So in a nutshell, that's our crash report. But does anybody have any questions about this? Okay, great. And so now, Jeff, I believe you're up. Is that correct?
Yes sir. The public participation.
I had one or a couple here. Sorry, I didn't hit the right button.
Oh, yeah,
Could you go back to the previous slide?
Absolutely.
Pedestrians?
Yes.
What is Doylestown and Peninsula doing differently? Maybe Mantoway also, that they have no pedestrian crashes. Just a statistical anomaly, or are they doing something different? There's
a lot of
pedestrian traffic in Peninsula, and I'm impressed that there were no pedestrian-related crashes for 3 years. That's three summers, a national park, and a very busy urban area with a lot of traffic congestion. Of course, slow-moving traffic, no accidents in Peninsula. Yeah. Doylestown, I'm not very familiar with, and Manaway is just a small, almost farm town.
Yeah, so a couple things, and that's interesting. You know, I hadn't really even thought about that. Like, I hadn't, I guess, noticed that, you know, Peninsula hasn't had any. One thing I'll say about pedestrian-related crashes is I don't want to say they're random because they're definitely not, but they're more random than vehicular crashes. Like, you know, they're because they're it's a smaller data set. They're rarer, so you don't have as many as vehicular crashes. So sometimes it just works out that way, you know. But as for Peninsula, I would guess, I would just kind of speculate, maybe it is because traffic is often crawling through Route 303, especially at times of busy pedestrian traffic. Like, that may actually work in its favor because the traffic tends to move fairly slowly through the village. That may be a good reason why there haven't been any, because people looking, can, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm just adding to that. I'm seeing other slow moving towns like Talmadge, although I don't know many people that walk around the circle. Doylestown, do they have any sort of traffic calming that's slowing the speed of traffic down? Do they have better police enforcement? Because if these things are working in these towns, let's replicate them in Kent, Ravenna, and Akron to get these numbers down a bit.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't want to paint with too broad of a brush, but I think, you know, a place like Doylestown or Manaway, you know, those are really pretty small towns that don't have a lot of traffic to begin with. So they're very different context from, you know, Kent, where the main roads moving through Kent have about 20,000 vehicles per day. I don't know off the top of my head, I don't know what the traffic volumes are on the main drag through what, you know, I guess we could call it downtown Doylestown, but it's just a very like small town. But, you know, I'm sure it's well below 5,000 vehicles a day. So that's all to say that might be part of it. Now, there are certain things that certain communities are doing that like can be thought of as best practices. I think some of our communities have started to adopt different proven safety countermeasures that Federal Highway recommends. And we certainly encourage that in a lot of our conversations with our communities. But, you know, it is interesting, like I, you know, to be kind of looking at this map and thinking, okay, why doesn't Doylestown have them? Or, you know, Talmadge, I think you mentioned it, Dave, that, you know, it's not a particularly walkable town to begin with. So maybe your pedestrian traffic is pretty low to begin with. So that might be part of it. But yeah, these are all, I mean, you can start going in 100 different directions when you start looking at this. And that's where it's cool. You know, I would recommend, you know, you start playing around on our High Injury Network web map on our website, where you can really look at all crashes and the circumstances behind them, and you can start to see trends and stuff like that.
I'd like to add to what you said, Matt. Doylestown is very, very small town. Most of those roads are sub 2,000 cars per day.
Okay.
And the downtown drag is very, very slow. There's a lot of stop signs, nothing faster than 25 mile an hour traffic. And the only highway like road is 585, and that's very isolated from where pedestrian activity would be.
Yeah, it almost kind of acts as a bypass of the town. It does act as a bypass of the town. Yeah. Yeah, so community character is just very different there.
Right. And the staff that I know is new may not know, but I'm in the railroad industry, and I've been in at least one or two railroad grade crossing collisions from the railroad side, being a railroader. Are we looking at any railroad grade crossing crashes in any of this, or that's also removed from the data?
So our freight plan that we approved last, I guess that would have been in September. I know we looked at rail grade separation through that. And I think we looked at Jeff, do you remember? Didn't we like, yeah, we did in that freight plan look at quantifying what rail crashes have occurred and stuff like that. I don't remember the details, but you know, it is looked at. I don't
I'll
know if
have to
Seth
ask
or
Mr.
Jeff can
Pratt.
offer anything
Yeah,
better,
I
but
can't quote any safety data from that report right now.
I
Yeah, I'm
can't
sorry I
either,
wasn't.
but what I can say is that that particular data is not removed from this data.
So if there are some grade crossing accidents, they'd be reflected here if you could find them. Okay. And the other
Yeah.
one I noticed, animal collisions are removed. I had one of those in February of 23. Is that something that you in any way have an opportunity to study so we could see where the animal collisions are occurring and ODOT and or the municipalities can do something to mitigate that? That's a big thing in Colorado where I've spent most of the last 2 years located, because you hit a moose at speed, you're doing serious damage to both the car, the moose, and possibly the occupants. Here, we only have to worry about farm cows. And maybe a large deer like I hit. Can we? Is that something that could be done independently of this federally required study?
Well, a couple things. First of all, this isn't a federally required study. This is something AMATS kind of does that's above and beyond. But that's just a minor point. It could be looked at, and it's something we've talked about a little bit about doing specific animal-related studies. I don't know if you noticed in, I think it was in my slideshow that like we actually remove the animal crashes off the top. They're not reflected in our lists because animal zone or animal related crashes and traffic zone crashes don't have to do with the characteristics of the roadway necessary. They have to do more with circumstances. But you're right that like that is, I'm guessing, probably a pretty quickly increasing share of our total crashes as there are more deer, you know, more deer on our roads and people are hitting them.
Yeah, the one I had in February totaled the car, although it is still drivable, and I'm okay, and so was my passenger. The deer was not. And just seeing the large quantity of small animal strikes, pets also, would be included in this, I think would be something I'd like to get more involved in. I know at one time at the Transportation Research Board in Washington, we actually had an animal strikes committee. And if anyone would like to put something like that together with citizens' involvement, I'd be happy to help take a look at that.
Okay. Yeah, it's definitely something we can consider for the future.
Bring it up with Curtis that Mangold wants to. I don't necessarily want to chair it. I might be relocating out of the community, but just some sort of animal strike subgroup or something where we just try to pull that data back out and plot a map like this with animal strikes just to see what the trends are and just talk about it one day during the summer when animal strikes are common again and see if we can get any federal funding to do something about it.
Okay. Yeah, we'll definitely talk about it internally for sure.
My collision was where I didn't expect it. Was on Interstate 76, just east of 14. I had gotten on at this 14 entrance and was just accelerating to the normal speed of about 65. And I ironically had just briefed with my traveling companion about traveling late night in this winter. We need to watch for deer when we get off on the state highway. And next thing
Yeah.
I know, he says, deer. I saw the entire herd. I moved and I luckily only hit one, but totaled the car and killed the deer. I don't know what happened behind me, but there was only one dead deer. So everybody else missed the rest of the herd. The herd either turned or made it safely across. I don't know. But you're not expecting to see a herd of deer on the interstate. I see dead deer on the interstate.
Oh,
That
yeah.
was
Yeah.
The second interstate animal collision I've ever had in almost 40 years of driving on federal highways.
Yeah, there are plenty of
obviously
them on there.
Obviously jumped the fence. So
I know that
fences.
this is going way back, Dave, but I don't know if it was through the national park, but there was a small study done probably like 15 years ago with the Cuyahoga Valley National Park, where they mapped out where deer crashes were throughout Cuyahoga Valley area. And a lot of them were on the interstates, like on 271 and stuff. So it's just, it was interesting to see, more than I would have guessed.
Higher fences, or since we're invading their territory, at least maybe get those warning flashers up like Indiana has, or we also had them on a U.S. high, or I think it was a state highway. We actually had a dedicated moose crossing. And one time I came through there and the lights were flashing yellow. Everybody else is about driving normal speed. I immediately slow down, and sure enough, there was a moose on the side of the roadway. And like I say, they can really total a car. It's common migration path, where every spring the moose go back to the mountains, and every fall they come down from the mountains for winter pasture. So there's been a consistent number of hits there, and therefore they've actually just given in that this is where moose cross, because that's where they've always crossed. And they put up the animal detector cameras that trigger the visual message sign and or just flashing yellow lights to slow down the patrons. But I do remember in 22 or 23 still seeing a dead moose on the highway that did get struck. But that was only one. I went that way quite often. Just a few comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions about the crash report? Okay. If not, Jeff is going to talk. We did kind of, as he'll explain, a very minor kind of interim update to our 3P, which is our public participation plan. So Jeff's going to talk a little bit about that.
Thanks, Matt. We updated the public participation plan at the request of the Federal Transit Administration, who was working with the transit agencies. So we decided to clarify a few things. So we basically took the 2022 public participation plan and added about 4 pages to it. It involved new data also. So we did update the data and the demographic data and some other information that was in there. But basically, we added a little bit more about our relationship with the transit agencies. We clarified our process for administering public comments, how we incorporate them into our plans, how we respond back to the public commenters. And then we also had a little discussion about how we develop our presentations for our meetings. So how we put PowerPoint presentations together and things of that nature. So the full document is very similar to the 2022 public participation plan. Aside from the additional information and the additional text, the draft plan was made available on October 27th, and it's required to have a 45-day public comment period. Up to now, we have not received any public comments, but hopefully, you know, if you have any comments, we'd like to hear them. So at this point, we're going to ask the Technical Advisory Committee, well, they approved it today, and next week we would ask the Policy Committee to approve that as well. So December 12th would close out the 45-day comment period, and then the document would have its final approval. So we'd be happy to answer any questions you might have at this point.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. The only other thing that I have on our agenda is the 2025 CIC meeting calendar. That was in the packets. I don't know if everybody saw that online, but we have selected our dates. As usual, we'll meet 6 times. Our first will be in February rather than January. And we kind of moved our meetings back a week or two from normal, just so we had a little more time after the holidays. A lot of the communities we work with and stuff, you know, around the holidays, things I don't know, just get like a little delayed. So just kind of allowing people to get back in the swing of things before we meet again. So that'll be our next meeting will be on February 6th. We'll also be meeting March 20th, May 8th, August 7th, September 18th, and December 4th. So just wanted to give everyone a heads up on that. We're pretty sure we're going to be switching to Teams next year. We find, and actually today was a great reminder of why that would be a good switch, given the near emergency we had where I was fretting until about 6:25 that I wasn't even going to be able to get on to start the meeting. So Teams is just a lot more integrated with the stuff we do, and I find it to be a lot more user-friendly just in general, even for, you know, the average person, you know, whether you have Teams on your computer or not. It's just, I find it to be a much more user-friendly system than Zoom. So we were kicking that idea around today. So don't be surprised if we end up, instead of sending you a Zoom link, sending you a Teams link here before the February meeting. So that is all we had on our agenda today. But of course, as always, if there are any other topics that you have questions about or want to bring up, I'm happy to open the floor.
Dave Mangold here again. Teams works pretty good. We use that at the Railroad Business Stuff quite often, and it seems to work very similarly.
Yeah.
Well, one additional comment there on the policy packet agenda. There's a reference to regional rail. The regional passenger rail is going to be brought up for discussion. I was going to correspond with Curtis or expected him to be on the call here. Do you know anything about that? What's coming up for discussion? Is it something about the 3C corridor or the inner city high-speed rail? What's up?
Yeah, it's very much related to the 3C plus D. I can give you like a brief synopsis, but I don't want to misspeak. So basically, there's been, as you might be aware, some momentum. Amelia Sykes's office has been approached and about, you know, the Akron area being studied as part of a 3C plus D or other long distance high-speed rail, and so looking into the possibility of feasibility of that. And through that contact with Amelia Sykes, her office approached the chamber. The chamber approached AMATS, kind of saying, you know, what's the appetite for this? Is this something AMATS could participate in or lead or fund or be involved in this studying? And so the conversation with policy is really just going to be exploring whether that's something that the committee would want our region to get involved with. So that's kind of where it is right now.
I'll be very interested to see the minutes of the discussion of the meeting next week regarding that. I know we've brought this issue up in the past. It's why I'm a CIC member, and unless someone else has the experience level that I have, no one knows the rail infrastructure here in Northeast Ohio better than me. And I can say that it would be challenging, but it is doable to bring passenger rail operations through or near Akron, Ohio. But there's a lot that needs to be done, including preservation of right-of-ways. And I'm aware of what's been going on with the chapter, the business chapter, and then the Sykes office. So okay. I'll be in touch with Curtis to let him know that I'm available as a consultant, per se, I guess, to help out with that.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Along those lines, what routes are being considered for that? Would that be on the Cuyahoga Valley Scenic Railroad route, or?
Well, that's the thing with this that's kind of interesting is, to date, at least the correspondence we've been copied on, it's not even really talking about how this would be achieved. It's more along the lines of, hey, we want Akron to be included. You know, if there's money out there to study this, we want Akron to be part of it. It's been kind of notable to us, to me at least, that they're not really talking about specific routes. And as Dave kind of alluded to, like, it would be challenging. Like, when you think of where our class one railroads are, like, yes, we have the NS line that goes diagonally through our area, like through Hudson and Ravenna. But we don't have like a great way to connect, you know, westward to whatever might possibly someday be going on with 3C plus D. You know, in the CSX line, south of Barberton, you know, it's single lane track for 7 miles. I can't remember, for
something
a few
like
miles.
That. Yeah, it's a bottleneck on the railroad from time to time.
Yeah. And so like those are the challenge. And then of course, you know, you brought up, Ron, and we've heard that before too, the possibility of the scenic railway line. Like, we all know the environmental issues with slides and stuff that occur there. Another thing that's been talked about several times, like 20 years ago, was it's the Wheeling and Lake Erie line, right, Dave? That goes through like Green and down into North Canton and everything. That's been a line that's been discussed.
Former B&O, but the Wheeling operates on it.
Okay.
Metra owns a large portion of it.
The Sandyville.
Yes. Yeah. And there are obvious constraints with that. And, you know, of course, a lot of those have to do with condition of rail and just even like the curve radii of some of those railroads. You know, they're not really designed for higher speed rail. So anyway, it's very early in the discussion, but our discussion is really just focused on what involvement can or should AMETS have in this discussion, and what shape might it take?
Okay, thanks for that information. I wish I could be there on Thursday next week, but I'll just have to look at the minutes.
Okay, yeah. Well, we will certainly have a discussion.
Hi, I'm Tiffany. I work at Portage County Board of Developmental Disabilities. And I was interested in the Portage, the PARDA program. That was in the notes saying that they were going to be covering the workforce transportation.
Yes, PARDA had a TIP amendment on this month's agenda.
Oh, okay.
PARDA was awarded $638,800 in federal funds for 5 projects. So I guess, you know, these capital items are not really directly related to Ohio workforce mobility. I guess it's kind of a stretch a little bit, but they qualify for it as a transit. I don't want to be negative about the grant because we're very grateful that PARDA got the grant, but
right,
it's for a new fuel pump at their main facility, and they're getting some computer upgrades for their buses and for scheduling and some other things. They're going to do some long-range planning, so I guess that would be a little bit related to workforce mobility. They're going to do some building rehabilitation. I think they need a new roof for their building, and then they're going to have some security equipment upgrades done around their property. So while those are not directly related to workforce mobility, just PARDA itself as an agency transports a lot of people to and from work. So that's why they got the grant through ODOT.
Gotcha. I'm in a lot of conversations with like Medina County, and they're looking at like very specific transportation to employment hubs. So mm-hmm. I was kind of hoping it was something along that line.
Yeah,
something a little bit more, you know, mobility workforce related.
Yeah, I think the program is geared towards that. And they did give, I think statewide, it was $17.5 million in these federal transportation funds to various transit agencies around the state. So depending on the other agencies, I don't have that list right in front of me, but some of those may be more oriented towards a job hub transportation.
So is this an annual grant offering, or was this a?
I think this is an annual grant. It's either.
So maybe that's something we can look at in Portage County for the future.
Right. And I'd have to look and see who was eligible to apply, if it's just RTAs in the state, or if there are also employment agencies or NGOs, 501c3 organizations that could also apply, or other government agencies. But there is a link on ODOT's website to that OWMP program.
Okay.
So that would have a discussion of eligibility, grant eligibility.
Okay. Thank you. I think we
Tiffany,
definitely have some hubs.
what agency did you say you're with?
Portage County Board of Developmental Disabilities.
Okay.
But so, I mean, I have a kind of targeted interest, but I do, I'm also part of SHRM and their workforce development chairperson. And chamber and a lot of different organizations that I work with. So I kind of champion workforce in general. And I know that transportation is the one thing that you always hear at every table that starts discussing it is, you know, we have the jobs, we have the people, but how do we get the jobs, the people to those jobs?
Oh,
And
yeah.
especially in Portage County, we have significant hubs. You know, we have Aurora, we have Streetsboro, that really have a lot of the jobs. But then getting people there is always the challenge. So when I saw that piqued my interest that maybe we were doing something in relation to that. Because like I said, I have heard other counties kind of taking a different approach, and I was hoping that maybe we had that somehow I missed the conversation, but we had done, had pursued something like that.
Okay. And this might be a, it's a question for you, but also a question from Jeff and Matt on our staff. Was that agency part of the coordinated plan in 2023? Do you guys remember? I can't remember if they were one of our stakeholders, but I.
Yeah, I could check, but I'm not sure. I don't think so.
Okay.
But I would recommend to reach out to PARTA because they are about to start their long range plan, and they're going to look at a lot of different things. They're going to look at their fixed route and their demand response service, and there is a like this program is a reoccurring program. I think for the next 2 years, it has funding for. I'm not actually sure on that. So I'm just, but I know next year they have funding for it. So I would definitely contact PARTA because I know that they, within that application, you have to describe, you know, like you have to identify certain hubs. And I'm assuming that they would, I don't want to speak for them, but I'm sure they put, you know, had Streetsboro and Aurora. Highlighted there. And I know, you know, like Brimfield and a couple other areas that I've had discussions with Parter about that they're discussing servicing. So yeah, I would totally reach out to Parter because they're gonna look to do the to start that planning here very shortly.
Okay.
Who at PARTA would do you guys think would be a good initial point of contact? Would that be like an Amy Ashley kind of thing
I'd say
or?
Ashley, yeah. I would say
Okay.
Ashley.
Tiffany, if you want to reach out to any of us tomorrow, like Matt Mullen is who was just speaking, our email addresses are on our website, or
Okay.
Jeff Gardner. We can certainly like help if you know if you want us to help facilitate that, we'd be happy to do that.
Yeah, I mean, and I can definitely bring in other partners. You know that because again I saw it and I get these emails. I have been getting them for a couple years and I've attended a few meetings. One was in person, but a couple. And so when I saw that, I just was interested. But I definitely don't, you know, work in a silo. I work with a lot of other partners and I'm sure would have the same interest in having conversations. And I mean, we do talk to PARTA. We do work with them exhaustively. But I just, you know, if that's kind of what the money's earmarked for, that might be the time to have that conversation.
Okay, yeah, I'm glad you caught that from our packets and that you were able to join us. That's
it.
great. That's great. Like it's always nice to know that people actually read like some of that stuff that you know like you wonder, are people besides people that are, we're directly working with, are they interested in that? So I'm really glad you were able to join. I hope Jeff and Matt were able to help you a little bit explaining this. They know way more about this stuff than I do.
Yeah, no, it's and that's why some of it goes far beyond my realm of knowledge or interest. But you know, the when you talk mobility and workforce, I get pretty excited.
We've been in a lot of those conversations ourselves. Are there any other questions or comments?
This one from Mr. Gardner. What city is that? Is that Mediterranean or European?
That is Madrid, Spain.
I
So
was
we're pretty close
wondering
on both
also.
counts.
Jeff is so dedicated that he took time from his fancy vacation to
In my rooftop hotel room.
his private rooftop villa. Jeff is independently wealthy, but he works at AMATS for free because he loves it so
Fun,
much.
yeah, so fun.
All right, everybody. Well, thank you very much for joining us. As always, if you have questions, feel free to reach out. Otherwise, hopefully we'll see you in February.
All right, everyone, have a good holiday.
Take care.
Yeah, you
Thank
too.
you. Bye-bye,
Thank you.
everybody. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Bye.